All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Oilers Nation Radio, presented by The Nation Network. Subscribe for free on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Oilers Nation Radio, episode 88. It is the Brandon Davidson episode. Tyler's excited. Dan's excited. It's just a tripod today. Rick is actually doing some work. He is the pine has reopened. He said he's getting a liquor order in today, which is very, very exciting. Go check out the pint if you got a chance. You reached out to Cam, did you, Tyler? And you got ghosted.
Fucking coom. I just wanted one of these.
We are back.
And we're not getting it because Cam Lewis did not respond to a request to be on today's show. When I messaged him, it was only 6 o'clock at night in Ireland. And as my girlfriend pointed out, you know, there is a chance that he was already fairly intoxicated by 6 o'clock at night in Ireland. So maybe that's why he didn't get back to me. But if he does, maybe we'll add him in halfway through, but no promises.
I'm thinking that it is a Friday night in Ireland and Coom is in the bag.
Probably.
If I was to guess. You know,
he might have been in the middle of a documentary and he just wanted to leave Tyler on red.
Very maybe possible.
He might have been watching that Cheer Squad documentary series or whatever.
Oh, good documentary. Good poll there, Bagnell.
Thank you. As always, I want to start off today's podcast by thanking our friends at Sherwood Ford the Giant for making this all possible. Go check them out in beautiful Sherwood Park, Alberta. They have got all the vehicles, the service, and the know-how that you need for all of your car and truck needs. If you're looking for a new vehicle, they're there to help. If you need some service, they're there to help. If you are needing some assistance during this strange time, they're also there to help with your options on payment flexibility as well. On Twitter, they are at Sherwood Ford, and on Instagram, they are at Sherwood Ford _ the Giants. I personally follow them on Instagram and Twitter, and man, they post some sweet vehicles. They post some very sweet vehicles. And one day, I'm going to get out to Sherwood Park and I'm going to test drive them all.
And every once in a while, you get to see Gus still.
Gus is the ambassador of smiles. And rightfully so. He's very handsome devil. Gentlemen, I want to start off today with a tribute, a little bit of a Stan episode of the podcast for your 2020 Art Ross Trophy winner, Leon Draisaitl. Just passed.
I hit the wrong button.
We were going to get this. We
You're
almost got the end bumper.
The Real Life Podcast.
This week, Gary Bettman did his little call announcement broadcast everywhere. We'll get to that in a second. But he did put an end to the 2019-2020 season in terms of stats. That means Leon is the big winner of the Art Ross Trophy. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, your first thoughts at maybe even let's just go back where he's come from, where he started. I remember that rookie season. He didn't really look like he was NHL ready. The Oilers tried to make it work. Didn't necessarily work. He got sent back to junior, had a played with the Kelowna Rockets, had a run there. And then from there, he just seems to get better and better every single season. Tyler, I just want to know what you think about Leon Draisaitl's projection from when he started, where he's at now, and now culminating in an Art Ross Trophy win.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think back to when he was drafted. And I remember it was, you know, a big body. Maybe his boots were a bit of an issue, but his vision was always something that was hyped up about him. And then you even look at him when he came into the league. Again, people just said he was slow. He didn't have a good enough shot was another thing you heard once in a while. And I just think you got to give that guy so much credit. It's something he talked about on a Zoom call today. You know, just when he talks to younger players now, he has so much of that experience of being sent back to junior, not making the Oilers out of camp that rookie season. The next year, having to go down to the American League as well. Like, he had to really put in the time to improve his game. And sometimes he gets just a horrible, horrible reputation with some Oilers fans. They call him lazy, and they say that there's not enough emotion in his game and all that. And it's frustrating because I think this is a guy who has proven through his play and the way he's developed how committed he is to the sport, to the team, to the organization, to winning. So I just think, you know, when they drafted him, you always have hopes when you have a high pick of a player, you know, budding into a superstar. With Draisaitl, even after halfway through that year when he got sent back to the AHL, I don't think anyone could have saw an Art Ross Trophy in his future, potentially a Hart Trophy in his future. And honestly, all the credit goes to Leon because he's the guy who put in the work and he's the guy who really changed his game.
Dan, before I get to you on your thoughts on Draisaitl, I just want to walk through what Tyler just kind of talked about there. So in 2014-15, he played 37 games with the Oilers. He only got 2 goals and 7 assists for 9 points. That was before he got sent back down to the Kelowna Rockets, where he went on a heater. He got 53 points in 32 games after going back to junior. In 2015-16, he did play 6 whopping games with the Condors. Only a goal and an assist during that time. And then he came back up to the Oilers, finished off the season with 51 points in 72. I remember that season. Oh, maybe he can only play with Taylor Hall. He's playing with Taylor Hall. Is he really that good? Well, let's fast forward. In 2016-17, he jumped up to 29 goals, 48 assists, 77 points. And gentlemen, little fun fact for you on Leon Draisaitl. He was the very last goal scorer at Rexall Place. So keep that one in your pocket for later. Hey. In 2017-2018, in 78 games, he took a minor step back, 70 points. And then last year, as we all know, 2018-19, he erupted. A 50-goal season, 55 assists, 105 points. Even though this year he missed out on 11 games, he still managed to beat that points total with 110 points, 43 goals, 67 assists in 71 games. Nation Dan, your thoughts on Leon Draisaitl?
Well, I think you kind of hit on it there too, Bag Milk, and it's something that and Tyler mentioned as well, is that there's a lot of doubters and a lot of haters of Leon Draisaitl still that say, oh, well, he can only play with Taylor Hall. Oh, he can only play with Connor McDavid. And now, you know, in the last, what was it, 20 games of the season or the shortened season, that line was our top line. There's just no two ways about it. And Leon Draisaitl was leading the way. Nugent Yamamoto, great players on their own rights and underrated as such. But he's a pretty shining example. How amazing is it for Germany to have their best player ever? He's 66 points back, I think, now of being the leading scorer for all of German hockey players ever in the NHL. It's unbelievable to see. He's a paramount of, you know, an example of somebody that, like Tyler said, he shows you every day that he comes out and plays and wins an Art Ross Trophy and is the front runner for the Hart Trophy, shows you what a person can do and overcome when it comes to the hurdles of being sent back to the WHL and having those doubters and then not doing well in the AHL. It's unreal to see. And so it's special to watch, and we're all, you know, we're all pretty lucky that we get to watch Connor McDavid on a daily basis, Leon Draisaitl. It's, you know, the list goes on. Nuge, another guy that, you know, has absolutely revamped his career is Ethan Bear this year. You know, we've seen a lot of these guys where they just, like Leon Draisaitl, where they just took their own destiny in their hands and took it and ran with it. And now we have, you know, we have some of the top players in the league.
So, Nation Dan, one final follow-up question for you. You no longer believe that Draisaitl should be in the AHL, yes?
No, yeah, that was I made a mistake, and I own it. I'm not. I don't pretend that it didn't happen. but the yeah, no, it is awesome to see, and it's good to get the as my parents call in here. Should we get them on the phone? No, but yeah, it's special to see a player come back and come back so strong again and again, right?
The thing about Leon, too, is, like Tyler mentioned it, at first his wheels were a problem, then his shot was a problem, but here we are in 2019, 2020, the season that is still kind of ongoing, and obviously it's a very, very strange circumstance, but those two things that were big knocks against him early on, who's complaining about his wheels and his shot these days? In fact, I was watching some highlights of Draisaitl the other day when the announcement was made, and it's incredible how he has set up not only as a player who can go coast to coast, he does it all the time, but when he sets up in his office there near the goal line on the right side, he's almost deadly at this point. And
well, yeah,
it's fascinating to watch how he's kind of ground out spots on the ice where you can't stop him.
He's invented a style of shot. You know, that's the thing that the announcers are kind of picking up on this year, right? It's the have your back to the player, accept the pass, and immediately get a shot off quickly. It's, you know, few guys in the league can do that kind of thing. Can you know, there's the Datsyuk and there's the Svechnikov, but like these are things that, you know, elite goal scorers do. It's special to watch.
Tyler, last word on Draisaitl.
I think a part of it, and this is a point I'll make again when we start having the MVP conversation or the Hart Trophy conversation, defensively as well. Like, this is a guy, when the Oilers go down and have to kill a 5-on-3 penalty, as rare as that happens, who's on the ice? It's Leon. Like, he is the trust in Dave Tippett. His hockey IQ, I think, is maybe even a lot better than still some people are giving him credit for. He is very, very close to a perfect hockey player, and you could say that the Oilers almost have two people on their team who are very, very close to being perfect hockey players. And this year, I mean, I don't think this is a one-off, this kind of dominance from Draisaitl. I think this is a guy who 10, 15 years from now, we're going to look back and go, man, the Oilers had, once again, two of the best players of their era, maybe the two best players of their era on the same team at once.
Well, it's pretty interesting to watch, right? Like, in June of 2014, Craig McTavish walks up, picks Leon Draisaitl. Okay, great. And then the very next year, to get lucky enough to be able to draft Connor McDavid. So having those two go back-to-back is absolutely bananas for this franchise.
Third overall, right?
It's akin to when, and I know Malkin was second overall, but it's akin to when the Penguins were able to draft Crosby and Malkin back-to-back. Like, that doesn't happen very often, and that's why the Oilers have such a very, very unique opportunity to turn this into some winning hockey clubs. And it was trending that way. And hopefully, as we get into this play-in series, knock on wood that it's actually able to happen, we'll see those two guys take another step in this play-in series and their second playoff run together. And I can't wait to watch it. But Tyler, you brought up the MVP. So he's already got the Art Ross locked up. That one's done. Now let's talk about the Hart. Leon Draisaitl is obviously a contender for the Hart Trophy as the league's MVP. What do you think his chances are? Do you like him as the MVP? Is there any challengers that have a realistic chance of dethroning him in this scenario? What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it's like an Oilers fan like protective thing, right? We don't want to just pencil him in as the Hart Trophy winner, even if we do. Just because the Eastern media always is that fearful thing, right? There was a talk of Panarin and how he was, you know, at the top of the list, even though they weren't going to make the playoffs. It just, you're always guarded against it. But the only person that I can even say is in the conversation, for me at least, is Nathan MacKinnon. But and what he did with that team when they've had the rash of injuries that they've had. But yeah, there's nobody that's been as dominant with a Connor McDavid who has one leg, you know, started off the season in a hyperbaric chamber and, you know, wasn't himself again and was still unreal, but you know, wasn't a superstar of the sort that he expects of himself. And Leon does it all. You know, Tyler touched on it too. Leon kills penalties. Leon scores goals on the power play. Like he's every bit of this team as much as Connor McDavid, if not more, this season.
I think if there's one guy, and without a doubt, the biggest threat to Leon Draisaitl's Hart Trophy race is Nathan MacKinnon. Just a dominant season, a year where it seemed like every important piece on that team was going down with injuries, and MacKinnon just continually found a way to put up offense and drag that team forward. When you look at the top 10 scores in the NHL so far this season, every single one, or 8 out of those 10, had a teammate that was also in the top 50 of scores, except for two. Nathan MacKinnon's one, and Jack Eichel is the other one. MacKinnon, he was close in terms of points. He finished 5th with 93. Granted, still 17 back of Draisaitl, but when you go to even strength points, he only finished 4 back of Draisaitl, and again, he was a guy who really had to do it on his own a lot as well. And I know Draisaitl was driving his own line, but he still had some pretty talented players around him as well. And I don't love using that as a knock because you can't punish a player for getting to play with other good players. But I just look at the fact that MacKinnon did a lot of that on his own this year in Colorado. Plus 13, if you put any stock into plus minus as well. I think Nathan MacKinnon is without a doubt the biggest threat to Draisaitl's Hart Trophy potential.
And to further that point too, sorry, I was just going to say the next highest scorer on the Avalanche is Burakovsky at 45. So he's almost 50 points short of MacKinnon's mark and played in 11 less games than him. So it's, yeah, you look at that and it's impressive, but Leon's better.
Looking at yesterday, the NHL.com writers kind of put their projections up for the Hart Trophy. Zach Lang covered it at OilersNation.com. So here's how the breakdown went on Oilers, or not Oilers, the NHL.com vote. So the way they award it is you get 5 points for a first place vote, 4 points for a second place vote, 3 points for third, and so on. So Leon, according to them, he got 12 first place votes, ended up with 83 points overall. Nathan MacKinnon did get second place, 4 first place votes overall. He ended up with 64 points. Obviously, this is just a preliminary look at the Hart Trophy, but to me, I completely get what you guys are saying about MacKinnon. He had a fantastic year. The fact that he was able to put up 93 points in 69 games is just bananas. Like that is a torrid pace for a guy who didn't get to play with a Nuge or a Yamamoto. But to me, this, looking at the body of work of the season, it's hard to put a knock against Leon, right? It's like you said, you both said it. He's playing in all situations. He's scoring clutch goals. He's taking big faceoffs. He's a underrated faceoff guy. He's at 52.6% this season as well. So I think that the stars are kind of pointing to Leon this year. And I hope that people really get a chance to see how good he is, because the three of us are lucky enough to watch him on a daily basis, but I don't know how many people can say that outside of Edmonton or outside of Oilers fandom. Everybody knows Connor, but they don't necessarily know how good Leon is. And I hope this is kind of a coming out party of sorts for him, because like you said, Tyler, he's a very, very fun player to watch. He's almost a perfect hockey player in the sense that he's got size, he can pass, he can score, he can skate, he does it all. If I had a vote, and I don't, but I should, it would go to Leon. It's hard to knock what he's done. And another thing is the Oilers, like I said, they had 3 Art Ross Trophy wins in the past 4 seasons. Connor's got 2 now. Draisaitl's got 1. This team is looking very, very good, regardless of what happens with these NHL awards. We all know they get a little bit weird. And I'm looking forward to when the voting does come out and we see somebody out of, you know, Boston voting for Marchand again or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I like that the NHL.com writers gave a first place vote to Connor McDavid. So that was nice.
Well, that was another thing too. Like, I mean, it's funny because Connor didn't have a Connor-esque year, I guess, even though he still had a fantastic season. it's such a weird thing to say. It's almost like, it's a shame though that it did get the season to get paused, because it robbed him of getting three consecutive 100-point seasons, which would have been the first time in 1,000 years for this franchise. So it's incredible. What a great problem to have. Who is your most valuable player? Is it Leon or is it Connor? What a problem, and what a great one to have. I can't wait to watch these two guys as the season kind of carries forward and hopefully into the playoffs, knock on wood that it's actually going to happen.
Hopefully we can have this debate for years and years to come about who is more valuable. One day it'll be a Conn Smythe debate. Who's more deserving of the Conn Smythe, Leon or Connor?
Again, like that's the kind of stuff that I'm looking forward to. I'm gagging for it. Let's hope that the NHL can get back on the ice later on in the summer, because I really, really want to watch it. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, I want to talk about the MVP performance from our friends at Sherwood Ford, the Giant. Again, you can follow them on Twitter at Sherwood Ford and on Instagram at Sherwood Ford _ the Giant. They are there to help you with new vehicle sales, service, financing, whatever you need in terms of getting yourself on the road. Our friends at Sherwood Ford are there for you. Gentlemen, moving on a little bit. I want to touch on one specific item from the Bettman presser, I get, whatever you want to call it. The stream that Bettman did this past week, where he was explaining, yes, we are looking at a 24-team playoff, whatever you want to call that too. We're going to talk about the play-in series and where those points should go, in your opinion, in a second. But first, I want to talk about the draft lottery. The draft lottery was one of the funniest things ever to watch, his explanation. It had about 8 PowerPoint slides on how this works. Forget all the odds, forget all the math. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. What I want to ask you guys about is, do you believe that teams that are included in those play-in series should actually have a shot at the draft lottery? As an example, let's say our beloved Oilers can't make it past Chicago. I think they will. But let's just say they don't, and they win the draft lottery. First of all, that would be fucking hilarious. Everybody would be so mad. But is that something that you think is fair, that a team that could either go towards the Stanley Cup, a chance to win the Stanley Cup, or not, and fall into the draft lottery? Tyler, what do you think about that?
I'm really, really torn on it, because there's the part of me that goes, well, in a normal year, if you don't get a chance to be one of the 16 teams that are in the playoffs, then yes, you get a chance at the draft lottery. And, you know, as much as they're getting a chance to go on a Stanley Cup run now, the teams who missed the playoffs also at some point in the season still had a chance to win the Stanley Cup, right? So for me, I think it is fair to still just treat them as if they're not playoff teams. It'll be weird to look back on this season, you know, 50 years from now and go, oh man, why were there like 8 teams that were in a play-in but not playoff teams and all that. It's not a perfect system. Nothing in this is a perfect system right now. But for me, I think you do have to include them just based on the fact that, I mean, yes, they're getting a chance to win the Stanley Cup, but there is no chance that someone can win both the Stanley Cup and the lottery in this format. So in my opinion, it's fair and they should be given a shot.
Mr. Daniel?
Yeah, you got to put up a carrot for these teams that, like the Edmonton Oilers and the Pittsburgh Penguins, where they're the fifth place team and they just missed the cutoff for a bye, and have to play a team that had like what did Chicago have, a 2% chance of making the playoffs? You have to give them some kind of, you know, well, if the worst case scenario happens, you at least get this kind of thing. And you know, that's what they'll say if we do, you know, knock on wood, all that stuff, not likely, blah, 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 blah. If it does happen, you at least have a chance at winning the draft lottery. And like you said, Meg Milk, that would be fucking hilarious.
I mean, if I'm just going full chaos mode here, I couldn't think of a funnier outcome than if the Oilers didn't get past Chicago and won the draft lottery with like a 2% chance of winning it or whatever. It would be hilarious. Obviously, I believe that they're going to go through Chicago. I think Leon and Connor are going to have a chip on their shoulder that they went from a 90-some percent chance to having to do a play-in. I think they're going to be pissed off. I think this is going to be their flu game, but over a series, and I think that they're going to make it through. But it is interesting, right? Like a team, like Dan said, like Chicago had no chance really of making the playoffs, but now they got a 50-50 shot. They got a coin flip. Same with Montreal. They also we're not going to make the playoffs, but now they got a chance of doing it. And you never know. With a guy like Carey Price, could he backstop them to a win? Same with the Blackhawks. Corey Crawford's won a cup before, maybe has something to do again. Looking at the play-in series, though, guys, there's still a lot of questions about how this is going to play out in terms of where do these points go? We've already put an end to the 2019-2020 season in terms of points. Leon's the Art Ross winner, but it's not really a playoff series, but it's kind of a playoff series. Tyler, where do you think those points from those series should go? To me, the easy thing is just include them as playoff points. Let's be honest. That's what they are. It's not a standard playoff. You said it yourself. This is a very, very odd situation that's hopefully, knock on wood, never going to happen again. To me, they're playoff points. Just put them in that category. I don't think whoever gets, you know, three or four games in a play-in series and then gets bumped, those handful of points that those guys are going to get are going to make a difference in the grand scheme of things. Just call them playoff points.
I agree. It would be weird, again, to look back on this in 50 years and be like, oh, Connor McDavid got 6 points. He is the NHL's all-time leader in points scored in a play-in series. Like, I don't know where to put them, and I don't think you want to just let them go into the abyss, because what if someone has a historic performance to keep it Oilers? What if McDavid goes and gets 11 points in a game? I know, unrealistic, but what if something crazy like that did happen? Where do you slot it in the record books? How do you keep track of that stuff? And it sounds trivial and stupid, but it is something I think the league needs to sort of keep their eyes on and consider here. There's a few little interesting small wrinkles, and where to put the points is one of them, but I agree with you, Bag Milk. Keep them as playoff points.
To me, it's just the easiest answer, right? Like, we've all said it. We are all living through this together. This is not a normal year. Nobody can ever say that this is a normal year. This format, Gary Bettman says, by no means is it perfect. Connor McDavid did a Zoom call yesterday with Darnell Nurse. He said, again, this isn't perfect. Put them in the playoffs. These are playoff points. Dan?
Yeah, I can't envision a scenario where they just say that they just disappear into the ethos. I think that the you know, the fear of a Montreal Canadiens Stanley Cup win, although, you know, possibly warranted, they're going to have won 19 games versus, you know, the Dallas Stars having won 16 games to make it to the finals. So to win the Stanley Cup, I guess. So it's just there's nothing perfect about this format. I think that it's just kind of a no-brainer to keep it as playoff points. But in saying that, nothing I've ever thought would happen in 2020 has happened, and the complete opposite has. So who knows, right? It's just, you know, you just kind of leave it up to the league, like running a draft lottery without teams in the draft lottery. It's weird. It's all just weird.
It is. It's all weird. So like Tyler said, it's going to be interesting to see what the NHL does with this, because obviously there's all kinds of things that go along with this, right? I mean, we still don't know exactly what's going to happen to the James Neal conditional third. Mike Smith has got bonuses that are tied to games played.
I think Ethan Bear has some bonuses as well. They have to figure out.
There's a lot of issues that need to get solved. I mean, there's a lot of players too, and even a completely different angle. Look at the 7 teams that aren't in the mix for this play-in/playoff. Like, I'm thinking of a guy like Sam Gagner. We talked to him last week on the Real Life podcast. He was a great guy, but there's a very realistic possibility that he won't play another game until December?
January. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like everything about this is weird. So I can't wait to see what they're going to do with this, because no matter what the final answer is, it's going to piss somebody off.
Yeah.
And it's going to be funny. I don't know. Right?
Yep.
There is a lot of weird wrinkles. Yeah. Like, I mean, I heard on TSN today, they were talking about Alexis Lafreniere and what's he going to do? Because come October, if the NHL is saying, well, we're not going to be playing games until January, and the Canadian Hockey League is shut down, they were talking about the potential of Lafreniere and potentially other top prospects going to Europe for 3 months just to stay sharp, just to be playing professional hockey somewhere. Again, one of those weird wrinkles. Here's another one I want to throw at you guys quickly. Are we done with this topic? Can I switch gears?
Absolutely.
What happens? So let's say when the 12 teams go to their quarantine rinks, you're playing 2 games a day per rink, which I think is the realistic one, because if you do 3 a day, you're just going to be completely screwing with the ice, and you should have 2 rinks in every hub city. So let's say it's 2 a day. One starts at 1 o'clock local time, and the other one will start at 7 o'clock local time. What happens when you get a game that goes into like triple OT? Because it's going to happen at some point in the Stanley Cup playoffs. How do you balance that? Like, let's say Edmonton Chicago goes to triple OT and takes 6 hours. Like, are they going to bump the other game back an hour and a half so they can get the ice ready? Like, how do you work that? I'm fascinated by that possibility.
Well, in that scenario, you're saying that there is 2 rinks, so you're not really throwing off the other rink necessarily.
But you're throwing off the second game on that ice surface.
Oh, you think that with the 2 rinks, they would have 4 games going a day?
I think they would have to, wouldn't they?
Or maybe they don't.
I don't know. I always just envisioned it being 2 games a day, and that's it. And it's just straight up, you know, 2 games on, 2 games off, because you gotta think that they have to sanitize everything. You know, I don't know. That's always the way I looked at it. But if you're looking at it that way, then yeah, fair enough. It's like once they reach the 5th overtime, it's a shootout. I don't know. Like, they're gonna probably have to create these rules. We had this happen on our stream there the other night because I forgot to set the fucking setting. So we went to a shootout at the play-in round, and we were like, you know, it's like logically it makes sense to have a shootout, but then at the same time, it's like, no, fuck you. This is playoff hockey, and you've got to have a continuous overtime. But I don't know. We've talked about this a couple times, I think, now, you know, obviously with the quarantine and trying to figure out how to get back to hockey. Every time you go down these roadmaps, it turns into a thought experiment that you could go on all night with. You know, this is just one small part of it. You know, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. And then that team has to play. They have to potentially play the next day too.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe the day after, and they're tired now. And, you know, like, I don't know. It's just, there's a whole bunch of, and then you, yeah, it's a thought experiment that can go on for hours.
I love the idea of NHLers getting their game pushed back like it's some kind of Christmas game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those guys haven't had a game pushed back like a Christmas tourney in years, and I think it'd be good for them. It'd be good for them. Keep them a little bit humble, keep them hungry, ready to go, making sure they're having something to eat between these long layovers. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we still don't know where the hub cities are at. There's a lot of questions that need to be solved. I mean, Gary Bettman said it this week. We're still in phase 1 of their 4-phase plan. So there's still ages to go, plenty to talk about, plenty to guess, and it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out. Speaking of interesting and the way things shake out, our friends at Skip the Dishes are always here to feed you. I am looking right now because I have no food in my house, Tyler, and I'm looking for something that I'm going to eat for dinner later. Maybe I get myself a burrito.
Oh, fuck. I had a burrito last weekend. From Bar Burrito, holy shit. Burritos are the best hangover food. I don't care what anyone else says. That is my answer. That's my take. Burritos, number one hangover food.
I would go with a nice, if I'm doing a hangover food, I would go maybe a nice pho or something like that. There's broth, so you get some food in there, get hydrated, get some salts back in the system. Either way, no matter which angle you're looking for, skipthedishes.com, they've got everything that you need, be it pho, be it a burrito. Maybe you want to go to Freshie and get yourself a salad. Maybe you want Little Caesars. You want a hot and ready popping in at your doorstep. Maybe you want a Donair. Maybe you want to look at some of the places that we've got in the Edmonton Donair Championship. Doesn't matter. Skip the Dishes is here for you. No matter what you are looking for, they're here to feed you. Just as Tyler always says, remember to tip your driver because they are doing a service and they're putting themselves out there just so that you don't have to. Tyler, that brings us to our armchair GM question of the week. Right. You had an interesting one.
Yep.
Let's hit it.
All right. So this one is based around Mike Smith, who is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. Now, I know a lot of people don't want to talk about offseason hypotheticals because it sounds like we're going to be getting playoff hockey. But the Oilers are going to need to sign a second goaltender next year to play with Mikko Koskinen. A lot of people assume it's going to be Mike Smith. He was 19-12-6 on the season, with a .295 goals against average and a .902 save percentage. Very respectable numbers. But he was on a contract that paid him a base amount of $2 million with the potential With the potential, sorry, I just saw the thing you sent us, Dan. We're going to get to that too because that is exciting. But with the potential to make upwards of $4 million if he hits all his bonuses, and he was about to hit all of them. In my opinion, the Oilers cannot afford to pay a 38, soon to be 39-year-old goaltender that much money. I think his next contract is going to have to be less than that, but I do agree that they should probably look at bringing back Mike Smith. So if you were the GM and you were going to bring back Mike Smith, what would that contract look like? I don't know which one he wants to take this one first, but...
Zach Milk, why don't you lead the way?
Well, I'm looking over his contract courtesy of our friends at puckpedia.com, and there's so many bonuses attached to this contract, right? The base salary was $2 million, but it could go upwards of $4 million if he hits all those bonuses. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, games played, playoffs, series wins, all that kind of shit. To me, I'm with Tyler. I have nothing against Mike Smith, nor do I have anything bad to say about the way he played. He was very inconsistent early in the season, but when the calendar flipped to 2020, he was arguably one of the main reasons that the Oilers had a chance to win on a lot of nights. You got to respect that. You got to respect the hustle. I personally think that Mikko Koskinen is the goalie that they signed to be their starter, and they need a guy who can push him, but they also need a guy who can cost less than $4 million. There are options out there. They can go and find maybe a younger guy, maybe somebody who doesn't necessarily want to play half the games, I guess. Well, I mean, with Dave Tippett, you never know, right? He does plateau system and he's done it all season. And that's going to bring me to a question a little bit later. But I would move on. I think that when you're talking about a guy who's 38 years old, playing a very difficult position, they could, in theory, tie up a bunch of money in their backup goaltender in Mike Smith, and his body just simply gives out on him. That's not to say that he's not competitive. He's the fighter. He can move puck, blah, blah, blah. I love all that kind of shit. But he's still a dude in his late 30s playing a tough spot. I would go for a younger goalie, personally. Dan?
I think I'm with you too, Beg Milk, that I'm probably looking elsewhere personally. But I know as the team, I understand that, you know, Tippett loves Smith and trusts him wholeheartedly. And so, yes, I understand that the team will probably look at signing him. And if I'm going after Smith, I would try to come at him with like a $1.5 million base salary. And then his bonuses, I hate what I think was a big problem with Mike Smith this year is that the boys' bonuses were spent or were made off of playing games. Mm-hmm. And so he always wanted to be in the net. And I think I honestly, and this is just me, you know, watching the hockey, I honestly think that Smith played some nights where he was probably tired or beat up and he just wanted to keep getting out there because, you know, at the end of the day, he doesn't have a lot of paychecks coming left from the NHL. And so, you know, the incentive of him to get into the net is as such that, you know, he's going to just keep asking to go in the net. I also think he's a competitor and you'd expect that from a competitor as well. But I think that my bonus structure would be based around his performance, solely based on his performance. You know, if he does, you know, fall off a cliff, like you pointed out, Bag Milk, that could very well happen. It's not going to really hurt the team because he didn't play 40 games this year and then fell off a cliff for us. Instead, he played really well for us. Okay, we have to pay him higher salary.
When you look at the potential options to replace Mike Smith, the UFA goaltenders coming this year, Braden Holtby, Robin Lehner, and Jacob Markstrom are without a doubt the top three, and I think we can all agree, out of the Oilers' price range. Corey Crawford, probably staying in Chicago. Craig Anderson, too old. Jimmy Howard, interesting fit. Thomas Greiss might be too much money. Cam Talbot, Anton Khudobin, Mike Condon, Brian Elliott, Aaron Dell, Keith Kincaid, Linus Allmark, and Laurent Brossoit. None of those guys really jump off the pages to me as legitimate upgrades. Jimmy Howard is the interesting one. I don't know how much he would cost, but we know Holland has a history with him. He has a long track record of being a good goalie in the NHL, a recent track record of being wildly inconsistent, but still at a similar spot to almost where Mike Smith was a year ago when they signed him. He's a goalie who's very up and down. He's 36 years old. To me, my answer is I would bring back Mike Smith. I would start by saying, Mike, the cap isn't moving. You're a year older. You got to understand the position we're in. There's a lot of backup goalies on the market. We're cutting your contract in half. Same bonuses, everything, but it's half. You get $1 million base with the potential to earn $1 million more if you play your games and get your bonuses. He probably says, no, I'd maybe be willing to go as high as 1.5 on the base. But again, no more than $1 million on the bonuses. I don't think you can risk tying up $4 million again in a backup goaltender or an aging goaltender. I'd be interested to see, though, if Ken Holland dips into maybe the RFA market. Pittsburgh has three goalies right now. Matt Murray might shake loose. He'd probably cost you a lot, and you'd have to move a lot of money to make that contract work. But a guy like Matt Murray would interest me. One of the guys in New York, Alexander Georgiev, would interest me as well. So there are some younger options out there who, again, I think the one hole when you try to project forward with this Oilers organization, the offense looks amazing. The defense has some really interesting young pieces coming up. But who is the goalie of the future? And that's the big thing that I think Ken Holland still has to go out and address with this organization.
I mean, Tyler, you just nailed my ideal scenario, because one thing that we haven't seen with the Oilers in forever is having that, who's the goalie in waiting?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Let's say, just as a thought experiment, they get Georgiev from New York. That's a guy that you could groom slowly, throw him in, he plays a handful of games, and he gets better and better and better, and then there would be your heir apparent already in the system to take over from Mikko Koskinen, provided that they wanted to move on from him at the end of his contract. Mm-hmm. To me, that would be the ideal. I would love to see Uncle Ken go fishing for some of these younger goalies that may not have a path to starting where they're currently at. It's exactly like when they got Talbot in the first place. He was never going to play more than Lundqvist. He just wasn't. And then he came in and he looked really, really sharp for a couple of years in Edmonton. And then, you know, he had to move on. But you never know, right? That would be my ideal.
Yeah, I think you're right, Big Milk. And I think that one of the things to talk about, too, is the fact that you kind of talked about it, too, is that, like, not very many teams these days develop their own goaltenders. They don't. The guys that you have that are your number one goalies around the league were not the number one guy that people drafted. The Marc-Andre Fleurys don't exist anymore these days.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, going out and being smart about grabbing some young guys off of other teams is what you need to do, because we've thrown a lot of darts in our draft pick dartboard at goaltenders, and it hasn't worked out for us yet. So hopefully we can go out and find somebody from another team that has been developed and we can work on.
We'll see. I mean, if anybody can do it, I believe Uncle Ken can make this happen. So we'll have to see what happens with the goaltending. It's going to be an interesting conversation for the next, you know, here we are in May, getting into June is going to be an interesting conversation for the rest of the year. Tyler, I want to stick with goaltending a little bit here. And I want to ask you, if you're Dave Tippett and the Oilers are going into this play-in series in Chicago, who are you starting?
Whew. Oh man, that is a loaded question, Bagged Milk. Both goalies had their turns this year at the crease, right? Like, both guys at one point looked like they were running away with the job, and then eventually the other guy would sort of take over. If you look through their most recent bodies of work in the regular season, Koskinen, it'll take me a second here, but here were his last five appearances. He stopped 45 of 48 against Vegas. He stopped 45 of 46 against Columbus. 10 of 10 in a relief appearance against Chicago, 42 of 43 against Dallas, 30 of 33 against the Vegas Golden Knights. Only once did he have a save percentage lower than 930 in his last five starts. Never did he have a save percentage lower than 900. Those are very impressive numbers. We've never seen what he could do in the playoffs. It's a different kind of pressure. However, yep, this year's playoffs is completely different. When you look at Smith, his last five starts, he only had a save percentage above 930 once and a save percentage above 900 twice. He had a not great performance, allowing four goals on 21 shots against Chicago. And then he allowed three goals on 24 shots against Winnipeg, four goals on 21 shots against Anaheim as well. It's tough to read who the hot hand is going to be, but personally, I have more faith in one Mikko Koskinen, so I would be going with him.
Dan, we're talking about with the play-in series here against Chicago and whether or not, and you're Dave Tippett here, so put on your Tippett cap, maybe your stash. Who are you starting in the crease? Is it Koskinen? Is it Smith? Smith obviously has a lot more playoff experience. You could argue that he was Calgary's best player last year in the playoffs. They got demolished by the Avalanche. Had it not been for Mike Smith, they probably would have got swept, I should say.
Yep.
Koskinen, we know he doesn't have that experience that Smith does. However, arguably more consistent throughout the entire season. Who's your starter when you're looking at Chicago?
So if I take off my mustache and my hat right now and I tell you my answer, it's probably Mikko Koskinen. But if I put on my hat, oh yeah, it's Mike Smith right away. He's a guy that I trust. He's a guy that I know. And the added benefit of a Smith starting and maybe relinquishing the net to Mikko if things don't go well is that you do just that. You show Mikko Koskinen what it is to be a playoff goalie, comes in maybe in relief of Smith in a bad outing, and then he takes the net and runs with it. We've seen it before, you know, in numerous situations where a goalie that maybe didn't have the playoff experience of their other counterpart didn't start the playoffs for their team, but then they took the reins. You know, the one that comes to mind is a nightmare for Oilers fans, but it's Cam Ward. He didn't start that playoff run for the Carolina Hurricanes in net, but he took over the net from them and didn't look back. And it's something that I think is a benefit to that too. But I just think that, yeah, if I'm channeling my inner Tip, it's probably going to be Mike Smith starting for us.
For my answer, just to round this off, I would also go with Koskinen, but I also fully expect, let's say this first series goes five games, I expect both guys to play. I think that's just kind of the way Dave Tippett's run all year. I expected the exact same in the playoffs. I don't know why he would change his strategy, whether I agree with it or not. I'm guessing we see both guys. But I would personally start Koskinen. However, if I was a betting man, I would bet that Smith gets that first game.
I agree with that.
Yeah. We'll see. There's also a bunch of questions about who's going to be on the taxi squad, how many players they're going to be able to include. We're going to look at line combinations as we go forward into the as we get nearer to the play-in series. But I want Tyler to get his buttons ready because it is time, as always, for the Oodle Noodle Hot Cold Performers of the Week. Our friends at Oodle Noodle are donating 10% of takeout, dine-in, and curbside pickup orders to local charities and initiatives. They're doing wonderful work in the community. I know later tonight on Nation Happy Hour, every Wednesday and Friday at 5:30 p.m. on Instagram Live, I'll be talking to Jay about what Oodle Noodle's got going on this week. You'll want to listen to that because it's very interesting just to see how they're giving back to a community that's been so generous to them during these strange times. And for the purposes of this podcast, we want to thank Oodle Noodle for making the hot and cold performers possible, I should say. As always, we start with the cold performers of the week. Mr. Nation Dan, your Oodle Noodle cold performer of the week.
It's been a tough week. It's been a tough news cycle to watch. I say that my cold performer of the week, though, goes to I don't know how to phrase this properly. It's a personal thing. We're all good friends with a former Nation member, Mandiz, and that guy had a very personal item stolen from his truck this week down in the Riverdale neighborhood. So my cold performer of the week is the piece of shit that stole from Mandiz's truck.
Yeah, just to further that, go check out my Twitter account. I retweeted Mandrick's looking for a little bit of help finding this personal item, and I truly hope that he gets it back because that's a tough one. Yes, I agree with you, Dan.
I didn't mean to be a downer, but yeah, that's my cold performer of the week.
You're listening to the Oilers Nation Radio podcast.
We only do this every single week, but it's always fun to see the delay on that first round of butts. Tyler, your cold performer of the week.
My cold performer of the week are those who are shitting on the idea of Edmonton being a hub city. And there's two groups of people doing it. There's people who have never been to the city who are crapping on Edmonton and saying, oh, who the hell wants to go play and live in Edmonton for a few months? We talked about that last week. But this week, a whole new wave came. people in Edmonton who are shitting on the idea, who are going against the whole, or who are saying, oh, there's no economic boost at all. This is pointless. What's the use? It costs the government essentially nothing in terms of real dollars. All that would happen is a handful, and who cares how big or small the handful is, a handful of local businesses would get a boost from this. Hotels would be full, and you could sit there and say, oh, but it'll just be big corporations getting it. Well, some hotel staff might be brought back from being laid off. You know, some restaurants, and someone has to cater and feed them and drive them and do all this stuff. I think it's nothing but a boost for the local economy. Even if it's a small one, it's a boost. So those who are shitting on the idea of Edmonton being a hub city, even though they live here in Edmonton, those people are my cold performer of the week.
My oodle noodle cold performer of the week is Calgary Flames fans. I was having fun this week making memes about them not getting the third round pick from the Neil Lucci trade. Obviously, we need a resolution from that from the league. Ken Holland said he has reached out for clarification on that. To me, if the season's done, the season's done. I don't feel like they get that pick. So to all the Calgary Flames fans that were on my Instagram, that were on my Twitter, and they were complaining that they're happy with just Lucic for Neil as a straight across swap because James Neil is bad, either you're not watching or you're eating paint for breakfast. My cold performer of the week, Calgary Flames fans.
Oh, that's cold.
Flipping the ledger, we are looking at the bright side in the hot performers of the week. Mr. Tyler Yaremchuk, your oodle noodle hot performer of the week.
Actually, can I let Dan go first? Because I have two, but I think Dan, one of them is the one Dan sent us. So Dan, if you're going to use that one, you go first.
All right, Nation Dan, we're pivoting.
Yeah, there you go. My hot performer of the week, it just came across the news wire as we were recording. It's weird for me to say this, but my hot performer of the week is the Arizona Coyotes. And the reason being is that they just announced just now on Twitter that they are bringing back the Kachina jersey, one of the best looking jerseys in the NHL all time, I would say. That's going to be their full-time jersey next year. And they did clarify that it's their full-time jersey when they are designated as the home team, just in case we're playing quarantine hockey for another year.
This is hot.
That jersey is super interesting because it's a very divisive one, right? Some people love it. I personally love it. I think the design's cool as shit. Some people hate it, though.
I love it.
Very interesting jersey.
Yeah, I think that, for the Coyotes, it's like anything to get their name in the news cycle for a minute, right? I get it, but you're right. It definitely does. It's a polarizing jersey.
I would also encourage people, if you don't know the history behind the Kachina jersey, to read up on it. It's actually a really cool story about how the Coyotes put that design together. There's a lot more to it than just coming up with a jersey. So I encourage anybody to do a little bit of reading about that one because it is a good one. Tyler, your Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week.
I'm giving it to the man, Leon Draisaitl, Art Ross Trophy winner. A big shout out to the big German, Leon. Very well deserved, obviously, because he outscored everyone by a lot of points. Hopefully a Hart Trophy is next. Much love to Leon.
Put some respect on my name.
Hard to argue.
Yes.
He's a warlord. Laziest Art Ross Trophy winner of all time. And I respect him for it. My Oodle Noodle Hot Performer of the Week, just to wrap this up, I'm going to give it to Jared in sales, the G-Wagon.
Ooh.
If you guys saw what he did to his vehicle, wrapping it in Nation Beer and Oilers Nation decals, it is looking sharp and it is looking ballin'. And I saw it on Twitter and I saw it on Instagram. That baby is getting all kinds of attention from folks that are seeing it downtown. So my hot performer of the week is going to Jared for the upgrades on the whip. Next.
Who's next? Who's next to make a Nation vehicle?
Dan, you're up.
I've been rolling around with the flag now for 2 months, but I have two flags on the car, but not a decal guy yet.
And just to wrap up today's podcast, boys, I want to look at some of the reviews we've gotten over the past couple of months. We've been obviously doing these via FaceTime since the league shut down in mid-March. It's been weird, but you know, we've gotten on a rhythm. You know,
except
I like looking at you
with
guys.
The hot buttons.
yes, the cold performer of the week is Tyler's insistence on delaying the button pushes.
That was a hard one to play a button off of.
we'll
love you, Tyler. We're teasing you.
So I want to encourage anybody listening to this right now, leave us a review on iTunes. I want to read these more often. This one kind of made me laugh. This one, Tyler, is from Slippery Dolores. Slippery Dolores says, wow. These guys are wow. I mean, you listen week after week and it's insanity expecting something different time after time, but nope. Wow. I don't really know what that review means.
I was going to ask you that too. I think I read that a couple weeks ago and I meant to ask you guys, like, is that a positive? I can't tell. What would you say?
I don't know.
Was Meg Milk?
Slippery Dolores.
Please follow up with us.
Yes.
Slippery Dolores. I want to know what, but it's a 3-star review. It's a 3 out of 5. You can't hate that.
It's halfway. But it's right in the middle. There's no real confirmation there.
No, Slippery Dolores leaving us all confused on that one. Next one goes to Maddie. Maddie gives us a 5-star review saying this is favorite podcast. It's day 35 of quarantine, and I've resulted in listening to old podcasts just to hear the Oilers are winning. Best Oilers podcast. Thank you to Maddie for that one. Very lovely. I can see the smile creeping across Tyler's face. He's very excited about that review. Loves a 5-star review. And thirdly, shout out to Chrissy. Another 5-star review. What a beauty of a podcast, she says. I'm a longtime Oilers fan. Follow you guys on Facebook, but haven't had a chance to listen to the podcast. I've been missing hockey so much and found myself with a lot of extra time on my hands, so I thought I would give it a listen from the very first podcast to now. Would cancel 2020 in a hot minute, but not this podcast. This has been the pick-me-up I needed. So thank you to Chrissy for a very lovely review. And like I said, if you were listening to this right now, help us get boosted in the sport category on iTunes. We want to be in the top pods.
Yeah.
I want to see Tyler's face. I want to see him smile. I want to see Dan smile. I want to see Coom smile, even though he refuses to acknowledge that he used to be on this podcast.
What a jerk.
As always, please subscribe, download, tell a friend, tell a cousin, tell a relative, tell a coworker, tell a socially distant friend. Oilers Nation Radio coming at you every single Friday. Follow us on Instagram and, well, maybe not Twitter anymore because Jack Dorsey decided to ban us for whatever reason. We still can't get that account back. But on Instagram, at ON Radio Podcast. For the Nation, Dan, for Tyler Yaremchuk, I am Bag Milk saying thank you all for listening. Have an excellent weekend. We will talk to you next week.
Shout out, Damien.
Best wishes.
Thanks for listening to Oilers Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media to stay up to date and never miss a podcast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.